You say you did it. I say you didn't. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. You say you worked hard. I say so did I. I say you got lucky. You say I didn't try. So you say it all worked. I say not for me. You say I didn't try. I say you just don't see why. You say I didn't try. I ask, can't you cry? You ask, why should I? I ask as I sigh. Why can't you see it? If we exist as I, too few will make it if we are only I. Folks, that's the whole question in life is how much do we care about others and how much do we sacrifice a little bit to make our world a better place? We're going to talk about all kinds of issues on this show. This is the Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, and I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Okay, welcome to Discourse. I'm Alan Jennings, your host, and tonight I've got two giants of the Lehigh Valley in the studio with me. One is Greg Potter, who I've known since we were stock boys together at Hess's in the early 1970s. Greg is a long-serving labor leader. He is the executive vice president of the Lehigh Valley Labor Council. He works for Capital Blue Cross as the senior labor relations consultant, which sounds pretty impressive. And Greg is in the studio with us. Greg, welcome.
Proud to be here. Thanks, Alan.
I got another guy with me, a guy that looks familiar to everybody in the Lehigh Valley because he's everywhere. He gets to be on television all the time. He gets billboards. He gets all kinds of cool stuff. And that's Tony Iannelli. He does not have his signature pink socks on. He's been riding his Harley because he's cool. And I'm glad to have Tony Iannelli in the studio with me.
It's a warm day. It was a perfect day. So
it is a warm day. That's for sure. Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about you guys for a minute. You know, you guys are in really key advocacy roles. One, pro-business, theoretically anti-labor. One, pro-labor, theoretically anti-business. So when you do that kind of work, you tend to have some kind of an epiphany in your life or something that made you want to be in that kind of a field. So I'm just let's start with the question of what was it in your life, Greg, that led you to be a leader in the labor movement?
Yeah, I was never a pro labor person. My parents didn't work at Bethlehem Steel or Mack Truck or Black & Decker. I worked at Hess's, as you know, and rose through the ranks to get paid nothing and doing all kinds of hours. And it wasn't until I got a job with Bell Atlantic, which was with the Communication Workers of America, and I wasn't really thrilled to be a union person. And until it hit home, that's when it resonated. I had a manager monitoring one of my calls, and I didn't feel good about the outcome that could occur. I called in a steward. The steward got each one of the six items off and said, "You're wasting our time. We're done here." And the manager agreed. And I thought, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. So I was sold. I was proud to pay my dues. I ran for steward three times and got involved with the Labor Council and had four tours as president, and we've had remarkable growth, but we also partnered with business because without business, we don't have a job.
Right.
So it's important that we work together. That's why we're proud of our rapport with Tony.
Yeah, I've been doing this work for 38 years, and I've always considered labor to be a natural ally. And I can't think of many people that, over the years, I mean, we're talking about some pretty impressive years of labor muscle in the Lehigh Valley, who has been at it as long as you have been. So, Greg, the workers of the Lehigh Valley owe you some thanks. Tony, you've been an entrepreneur. That makes sense to lead you to a chamber position. But was there something in your life that said, that's what I want to do?
No. I mean, it was nothing. I never thought I'd be in this job. We had a family business. I saw the great side of business. When I was younger, we did well. Wealthy, 50s, 60s wealthy with seven kids means you go to
have
the shore 2 days a year.
Pay those bills.
But anyway, but then my father lost his business, so I saw the downside of what it could be and our house and everything. And then I saw what labor could do because I got a job at Mack Truck and my dad got a job at Western Electric. So they basically saved us, really. I work for a business organization, but I have a ton of respect for what Potter does and what the middle class does and what they bring to this country. So my job is to promote business in the Lehigh Valley, and sometimes, so sometimes it's pro-business with what is viewed as pro-business legislation. And on rare occasion, we say, Greg and I will say, today I'm chamber guy, you're labor guy. But we always seem to work it out, and I love the relationship we have, and I have a ton of respect for him. I love going, last thing I want to say real quick, Alan, is I love going to his annual, the dinner that they have for the Labor Council, and just see the stories, the people that work hard and have worked hard their whole lives and played by the rules.
Yeah, it's an interesting story, the labor movement in America. And, you know, when you compare it to Europe, I mean, that's one of the things we might want to talk about here. But, you know, I've got this probably unhealthy obsession with high school. I grew up in Lehigh Valley. I went to Emmaus High School, class of 1976. And a lot of my friends and I still get together. We recently went to a Grateful Dead concerts out in Boulder, Colorado. We go into all these baseball trips. I think of myself still as like a 19-year-old punk, even though I'm 60 years old. So, you know, what were you like in high school? Were you like BMOC, or were you like the nerd, or were you a jock, or were you a greaser, or a freak, or what was your shtick in high school?
I was kind of in and out of. I wasn't a great student. I was really but I wasn't in trouble. But I just wasn't a good student. I think I was bottom one tenth of my class. I was really a bad student. We had really, you know, we had a big family, had very few rules. And I was kind of, I was an athlete, but I wasn't in, I was just, I think a lot of people, I went in and out of crowds, you know, in those days,
yeah,
a lot of it was kind of the hippie guys, and I hung around with them, and then so I was somewhere in between. I liked people, always liked people, but so I was somewhere in both of those camps, that's for sure.
And you're a Central Catholic graduate?
No, Alan. I was Alan. I started in Catholic school. Then we all got transferred over to public school.
Gotcha.
Some reason. I don't know. I think it was because my dad wanted to save money, I'm pretty sure.
Too many similarities, because I went 9 years of Catholic school. We couldn't afford the $242 a year to keep me in Central, so I had to go to Alan. But I did the same thing, Tony. I hung with a lot of different people, had various acquaintances and some close friends. But
Are you contemporaries? You were both at Allen at the same time?
No. He was my football coach in eighth grade.
Yeah, his coach, yeah.
Really?
I'm an old guy.
Yeah.
Huh. I still have to see the film of him running a football back for a touchdown on a kickoff. Makes me sick.
But you know, Alan, you bring up something which includes you, the work you've been doing, for how long you've been doing it, and Potter. And one of the things I like about the Lehigh Valley is you build a reputation the best you can. We're not perfect. You know, in the 21st century, if you have a flaw, it's going to come out. But I think we've all, for a lot of years, tried the best we can to make this community the best we can make it with as little animosity as possible.
It's an interesting community, too. I mean, there are some people who understand and appreciate the value of the small world kind of aspect of it. You know, I mean, I think I know everybody. I mean, it feels like I know everybody. And, you know, I can make a phone call and call Bob or Jim or Nancy and say, hey, I need your help with this. And they know who I am. And, you know, did something together before. But there are some who consider that to be some kind of vast conspiracy, you know, of the deep state, you know. I think there's a meanness that's increasingly unhealthy in the Lehigh Valley. I don't know what we do about it, but... You know, one of the things we can do is have discourse about these issues. Speaking of discourse, this is Lehigh Valley Discourse. This is WDIY. I'm Alan Jennings, my host tonight. I am very proud that I've gotten both Tony Iannelli, the CEO of the fastest-growing chamber in the country, and Greg Potter, who is my favorite labor leader. Greg, actually, you were both there. We both participated in a roast a few years ago at Saints. And, you know, I was roasting Greg, and I had a ton of fun with it. I was able to just fry the poor guy. And one of the things I said was that Greg's not very smart. He has, Tony Iannelli has him believing that the Chamber of Commerce is pro-labor. I wonder, like, from your perspective, you don't have to deal with the union because you're not in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to be a chamber leader and be pro-labor?
Well, let's see. I will say this about our organization, particularly the Lehigh Valley Trades. We have some of the guys on our board. And I've gotten very little pushback because I think we realize that. So it's not easy. I mean, you know, the easiest stance would be we're business and we have no relationship with labor, and higher wages are going to put us all out of business and so on. But the world has changed today. Labor has changed the way they approach. And I think has to do with people. Again, I've seen what they have done for me and my family in a way that, you know, saved us at a tough time. So you remember those things, I think.
Yeah.
And so it's a balancing act, but there's a lot of pieces to this 21st century economy. And
it's about relationships. And
yeah,
I think that's lost on our children. They don't understand the importance of making the relationship, of shaking someone's hand and looking in their eye and speaking to them rather than texting. And that's the sad part, because if we hadn't done that, we wouldn't have this report today. And we're not always, you know, part of the Mutual Affection Association. We have our issues, but we get along, and when you make the attempt, and you make that connection, this is the reward you get out of it.
You know, I think Alan, even with you, there are times where you'll call, take on business, and I think you know where someone's heart is, and I think that's the biggest thing. You know, I know what Greg's motivation is, where his heart is, and I know where yours is. So how do you, when someone has a real purpose and believes in it, wants to do the right thing. Maybe you don't agree all the time, as Greg said, but.
You know, Greg and I, our backgrounds tend to put us on the left side of the political spectrum. And normally people who do what he and I do would have to hate you,
yeah.
You know, because you're supposed to be like the icon of the business community. And so I wonder, doesn't it stink that he's such a likable guy?
When I used to work at MacTruck, it was funny when I worked at Mac. But if someone was, and you maybe can remember this, if someone was doing something that wasn't supportive of the union guys, we used to say, "Yeah, I think you joined the Chamber of Commerce." Wasn't that the old line,
yeah,
Pots?
Yeah.
Which is kind of
common. And we also timed Tony on how long it takes him to say that he worked for MacTruck and was UAW member of Local 677.
Well, that is the truth.
A minute and 12 today.
But it's the truth. It's yeah.
And he's proud of it. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's
and I'm sorry, but real quick, I was interested that both of you guys, you know, because that takes me back, we're stock boys at Hess's. You know, that makes me smile, because
yep.
I remember that whole crazy world of
and
retail.
It breaks my heart seeing the Bon-Ton stores close and the distribution center where I worked for a while. Folks
yeah.
I worked with in 1979 are still there.
They never paid me a nickel over the minimum wage. I can remember making – I mean, I was moving refrigerators in the distribution center for, I think, $2.35 an hour, you know, and they sharpened my labor side of me. And I remember talking to Frank Stevens, because there was a Teamsters organizer hanging around, and I was very sympathetic to labor. And I went to Frank Stevens and I said, "Frank, you know, you have a shop here that is very conducive to making workers mad enough that they're going to be receptive to that pitch." So I spoke very favorably about labor. A couple of days later, I called in sick. I wasn't really sick. They found out about it, and they used that as an excuse to fire me. There was no doubt why I was really getting fired. Yeah. But so I tell people I was fired for being a pro-labor guy at Hess's.
And they had carpenters working in the distribution 17. Center, too, who were get their breaks and so forth. And we wonder why we didn't get the same things. And
yeah.
Found out the hard way.
Well, you know, from the 1940s until the 1970s, as the American economy grew, and it grew at a robust pace during those years, the gap in income between workers and managers declined. Something was going on during those years, and I think you and I might agree on what it was.
It was the highest density level of union penetration in the workforce ever.
And since the industrial economy took a nosedive in the early 80s recession, where we pretty much deindustrialized the Lehigh Valley. I mean, we lost the Mack Trucks 5C plant. We lost Black & Decker. We lost some clothing and textile mm-hmm. companies. We lost
yeah.
Champion Spark Plug. And we lost a lot of Bethlehem Steel. That all changed. And since those late 70s, the wage gap, of course, has widened. The gap between the highest paid employee and the lowest paid employee has widened. And you got to believe that has something to do with labor getting whacked. I mean, you guys have been really getting knocked around a lot. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, my last year at Bell Atlantic Verizon, 2008, I believe, I think I made $63,000 a year. And that year, the CEO, Ivan Seidenberg, it would have taken me 435 years to make what he made in one. And arguably, I had a hell of a lot better year than he did. And when you look at the productivity from the early 70s, productivity has increased 73.7%, and wages only have increased by 12.3%. So they're getting more for their buck, and they still want more. Micromanaging is just rampant throughout business.
Tony, I know you're not an economist, but what is there a conventional wisdom position that the business community has these days about why that's going on? I think it's one of the most troubling statistics out there is that we've got almost no unemployment. We've got like, what,
3.9?
It's a full employment economy.
Yeah, virtually full employment.
In labor, you know, in economics 101, you learn about the laws of supply and demand. And so there's not enough supply to meet the demand, and yet wages aren't going up. What's up with that? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think they have to go up soon because, boy, I noticed that the demand for workers is really high. I mean, there's a lot of demand for workers. Yeah, I don't know, Alan. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we did have a recession previous to this, so that might have given them a little bit of a hit. And I think you make a good point. Labor is not as strong in terms of the industrialized economies. And I'm really surprised that the new piece of legislation, the Supreme Court ruling on
public sector.
Yeah. So that's going to have an impact. So I don't know. I mean, look, capitalism, you know, is an interesting dynamic, and that's what my job is. But you know, you do wonder if you've got the very rich and a wide gap, that's not good. That is not good for anyone. I'll tell you who he and I had a discussion about. It is a big proponent of that. It was Seifi Ghasemi at Air Products.
Air Products CEO.
Yeah, he's very big on this gap not being as wide. It is in the long run. At some point. If that gap gets too wide, I'm getting way ahead of us, but if it gets too wide, strange things can happen to a country. So I don't know how you – can you do it by conscience? I don't know. You know?
Yeah, you know, so you talk about the minimum wage. I mean, the minimum wage has a similar track. It was originally proposed in the early 1930s. The idea was that workers who had full-time jobs should be with a family of three – should be able to afford to pay their bills and should be lifted out of poverty. That was the case from when it was adopted until 1980. And every year except 1958, the year I was born, interestingly enough, the minimum wage did what it was intended to do. Since 1980, it has never once done it. You were pretty bold on the minimum wage issue at the chamber. It was an interesting development that that you endorsed an increase. It was a modest increase,
mm-hmm.
but I would have taken it at the time because the minimum wage is still only at $7.25 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that a family can meet their expenses. They'll be living from crisis to crisis, not able to pay their bills, relying on the food pantries, and that's just not the way it's supposed to be. Don't you think if somebody works a full-time job, they ought to be able to at least pay the rent?
Well, I think we need to raise minimum wage, but I also believe that we could put in a tier system for that because there's different types of work. And folks who are getting minimum wage now are not the prototypical ones that are coming out of high school. There's a lot of seniors who don't have a pension who are relying on Social Security, and they're working there not because it's the fun thing to do and it gives them the time to get out. They need the money to pay their bills and exist. There's a big difference. It's going back to what it was in the 20s when folks are afraid of going to the poorhouse. That's the other option. When you look at housing add into the mix, you don't have housing out there. My brother could take money and lose his insurance, and then he's on the street. Unfortunately, there's no income housing to take him in. So you balance that act.
Yeah,
so I think, and even the seasonal workers, some of the companies, a rather large one locally, takes advantage of folks who are disabled and pay them less than minimum wage, putting managerial titles on kids who are 16 and 15 and putting them in harm's way who haven't received appropriate training. We need to look at those things, too. There's a whole balancing act here.
You're listening to WDIY. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight are two giants of the Lehigh Valley in terms of leadership. Greg Potter has been in the leadership of the Labor Council in the Lehigh Valley for decades. Tony Iannelli easily the highest profile name in the region, host of Business Matters on 69 News. Both of them are in the studio. Stick around.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Okay, I've got Greg Potter, Lehigh Valley Labor Council, and Tony Iannelli, the Chamber of Commerce, in my hands here. It's tempting to go after Tony with some all kinds of crazy questions and yell at him and point the finger at him like he used to do to me on Business Matters.
Right now, yeah. That's right, you owe me. Go ahead.
So let's talk about what I think is the most telling issue here, and we started to talk about it before the break, about what it's going to take to get wages up in America, because I'm concerned. Apparently, there aren't enough over the road drivers now, but before the data was finished being stated about the shortage of truck drivers that are over the road drivers, Google already was testing a driverless tractor trailer. That is mind-boggling. I mean, that they could come up with that kind of a solution to their labor shortage in such a short period of time is mind-boggling. So it kind of makes you feel like you're useless. I mean, like you have no value. If you got limited skills, God gave us all different breaks. Tony's good looking. Greg's smart. I don't know what my gift is, but we make the best of those things. But today, we can automate us. They can automate us out of a job. So, what do we do in that environment? You got two very different perspectives on this.
Well, I think you're going to be surprised by mine, but mine is to instill an ethic that you are appreciating your customers. So when I recently canceled several appointments for a doctor for some long-range work and perhaps surgery, I went somewhere else and I canceled them all. And it said, oh, you're going to cancel all? Okay, thank you. Not why, can I save this sale? What's the problem? I'll be glad to help you out with it. No. And at some point, that phone stops ringing. So when you're going to a grocery store or a hardware store and you're using the self-checkout, you're also taking someone's work. And you're going to go to these new McDonald's and put in your own order, someone else's job, I don't care how they spin it. You have choices. I will not deal with just a machine. I want to talk with someone and deal with them if at all possible. Sometimes you can't. I get that. But we have choices. And the choice has to be to support other workers.
Tony, you guys have a public policy committee. It's led by a very vivacious woman, Michelle Griffin Young. Do you guys wrestle with this? I mean, what do you do about this? Because in my judgment, the people who make toasters and automobiles aren't going to make any money if nobody can afford to buy toasters and automobiles. Mm-hmm. So, that wage gap, that wealth gap, that skills gap, is an important part of the marketplace. Does the chamber look at this issue when it wrestles with its public policy issues?
Well, I just did a roundtable discussion with people at the workforce board. And one of the things, the biggest thing was we can't find, here's what business was saying. And it was all business leaders. There were about 22 of them. Can't find people. Can't find people who want to stay on the job.
Can't find people. The pass the P test.
Yeah. That's a whole different story. But anyway, it was about finding people for the jobs, which would tell me, I would think wages have to rise if the demand is there. But it really was about a lot of that. People are coming here; they're not ready to work. They don't have the ethic. They don't understand. Being timely and so on. So, I'm hoping that's the things we've heard for a lot of years. But it is people are not coming, and I don't. We want to put everything on the schools, and I think some of it has to do too with. With how we're brought up and what our you know, how we're taught in terms of working for what, you know, for what we want to get. I mean, I think we came up in an era where that was very clear. You had to work and then you were rewarded. So that's a broad answer. Let me get back to your question. I think about it. I think if we don't have a strong, when I go to Greg Potter's dinner and I look around, I know a lot of those people. I know what they've done. I know if they've played by the rules. I know if they've worked hard. I know they showed up for work every day. If we turn off that dream, that does concern me. So at the top, people are living the dream, making real money. They have access. Yeah. I see them.
Yep.
And okay, God bless them.
Good.
It's yeah, and they've earned it and good. And at the bottom, I do think I give you the one last example. I have a family member. My sister and her husband worked hard their whole lives, two jobs. They have a school loan for their daughter because they couldn't get they weren't at the top side, mm-hmm. not rich enough to have it. Weren't at the bottom side, didn't get the support, maybe stuck in the middle. And now their number just went up $700 because he got a payout on his pension. You know, so that's the group, again, I think maybe who Greg represents, that middle class that I really, I mean, look, we got to help everybody at all levels, but the middle class really, to me, that's who drives this economy, and I don't want to ever lose that, and that's the one that scares me. But,
you know, I keep hearing that employers can't find people,
mm-hmm.
and then I see them using software that looks for the keywords on resumes, and I'm sorry, but I tend to think that the HR folks, an awful lot of them, are lazy. They're not taking the time to interview people. There are good people out there, and you can find out in 5 minutes of opening a questioning if they're worthwhile pursuing with. And yeah, it takes time, but going off the keywords and not having the right verbiage on your resume and cover letter disqualifies a tremendous amount of people. And what I've seen through my personal situations lately is that companies, some pretty big ones, are more interested in acquiring data than providing the actual service they started out to do. And there's a serious issue being so data-driven where you're just missing the boat on actually taking care of your customer.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You were going to
say that. No, go
ahead, Tony. He was making a good – oh, I was going to say an example. I'd be an example. There's no way – if I didn't work at the chamber, I don't think I could get a job today because I'd fill out the form electronically. College degree, no. Done. I'm out. And because that's the situation with me. So – I agree. That's this whole electronic search. And, you know, it's a fast-paced world. I don't want to sound too old school. But it does eliminate a lot of people that have potential, you know, have potential. With some loans, for example. People, we used to be able to give character loans.
Right,
you know
right,
that, Alan. You
right.
fought hard for
right,
people
right.
you knew to get character
yep.
loans that lifted them up. So, you know, in this process, if you don't, you know, if you can't hit the key boxes, you're off, you're, you know, access. I know it's something that you work on, Alan, and that's one I think about a lot. I have access. You know, if you don't, it's tough. It's a tougher universe.
Yeah. And it goes back to making the relationships. Even if it's at your first interview, you're building something. There's a rapport there or not.
You know, this is an interesting statistic. About 28% of the homeless adults in the Lehigh Valley enter a homeless shelter employed. I mean, just think about that for a minute. You go to work, you get up in the morning, you go to work, and you come home to a homeless shelter because the job you have doesn't pay enough to, you know, get you there and back and pay for child care and pay for the health costs that aren't covered by whatever insurance they may or may not have. You know, the rents are going through the roof. There's something terribly wrong there. And part of me thinks that a lot of people don't want to buy this stuff because they don't want to even consider the prospect that our country isn't as good as we think it is. You know, that we're not providing the opportunities that we could, that you know, a middle class is a sign of a healthy democracy in my judgment. And, you know, I'm not sure this is a very healthy democracy. We could get into a whole range of issues there, like, hasn't labor been restricted in how it can put money into political campaigns?
We have been forever. You know,
yeah,
it's
I know,
a misnomer
but,
that you can just take dues and put it in for campaigns. It's not. There are stipulations. There's LM reporting. We get nailed like you would not believe by the reporting we have to do, and we're singled out. You look at what happened to the post office back in Bush 2's regime. You know, they made it where you have to prepay health care and your retirement 75 years in advance before they're born. It's the biggest way of union busting. Two agencies in the federal government, the NSA and the post office, have to prepay. That's ridiculous, but that's what it is.
The Supreme Court decision that that allows employers to decline to collect union dues for their as part of the, you know, paying in their paycheck. What's that going to mean? Is there any sign yet?
Well, Mark Janus was such a proponent of freedom of speech, and he went out and lived and pushed this to the Supreme Court with some help from some think tanks. He stood by his convictions and just resigned his job at the state to go work with one of those think tanks. So he really had a lot of guts in what he wanted to do. You know, there's a lot that goes into working with the union itself. And this is done, and you can see the list of folks who supported this that are just totally anti-union. And they know that if you cut off the funding, which the NRA is looking at right now, if you cut off the funding, the rest of it dies. So you're going to have business agents working to the point where they can't get to as many places, and they're going to have, you know, not as good representation. Locally, and the PSEA has only had, I believe, 8 people. The Pennsylvania State Educators Association has only had like 8 people who have resigned from the union not to pay any dues at all. I believe they're getting a good value. I also believe they're going to get hit a lot harder come September when they go back to school. But this is ludicrous. You know, these folks are not getting rich over this, and the monies are not being used. It's a democracy. I didn't vote for Senator Toomey, but he's still my senator.
Yeah, so, Tony, does business feel like it's sort of in the driver's seat yet with, the, you know, the balance of power?
Look, I don't think they're pounding their chest, but now this is where we – I think if we want to get political, I think the previous administration, I think Obama taking – we did support minimum wage from $7.50 to $9.50. He wanted to go to $15, and the exempt employees double that salary. So I think business felt like this – and believe me, they just played by the rules and kept hammering away because I talked to them all the time. You know, well, they didn't say we quit or this is terrible. They just kept – but I think they do feel – whatever you want to say, that they now have an administration that is favorable to business, that is getting rid of some of these restrictions that held business back. And so I do think that I don't think they're pounding their chest, but I think they feel like this is a time where they can ramp it up, they can invest, and without many roadblocks or interference. And that's where, I guess, financially, that's where I change. I do think that we should let business free to do business. I didn't say that, but that doesn't have to do with the wages necessarily, but I do think that they should be able to operate and do what entrepreneurs do best. And I think that we put a lot of restrictions on them in the past. And I think, look at the unemployment situation. I mean,
well, I'll tell you what, let's take a little ride when we're done here out the Route 78 to Interstate Drive in Harrisburg to the AT&T call center. You can tell those folks who are losing their job now that their work is being offshored, and they're getting, after AT&T got huge, huge tax reductions, there was major bonuses all across the board for executives, and there's now 185 people in Harrisburg who are out of work. I'm sorry, maybe I'm a nationalist or an isolationist to an extent, but when I call someone, I want to be able to understand what they are saying.
Oh, me too. Look, and, I'm not suggesting sending jobs overseas.
The work that AT&T's and Verizon has sent overseas over the years, it's not because they do better work. Because they'll work for next to nothing. And I'm sorry, you want to get, it's not a matter of low cost. And you've heard this term a lot. The optimum word is best cost. There are a variety of reasons why folks use union contractors for their work, because the quality is better. Same thing goes, my 18 years working for Bell Atlantic and Verizon, the call center, I made sure that everyone got the top service. And I was proud to be an employee there. And I'm sorry, to have the work done overseas because they'll pay them for 40 cents a day is the wrong reason to do business. So if business is left to go to their own device, they will do just that.
Well, I agree with that. I don't think we should be sending jobs overseas. I'm really talking about middle size. I mean, that's really, let's face it, my 92% of my membership is medium and small business.
Yeah, who probably I think fewer operate than 10 employees. Even,
yeah,
right?
They operate in a whole different universe. These are family-owned business in many cases, and I think are trying to do the right thing, but not always. Look, Alan said it right. I mean, the gap is widening. Wealthy people are getting wealthier, and poor people are getting poorer. And that's not a good recipe in the long run. But So you look at, you know, it's a tough balancing act.
You've got a huge underground economy too that gets paid under the table, and that's not even on the ranks.
Yeah.
Now, there's a multitude of restaurants and bars, and I've worked in them where they were paid under the table. You have, you know, construction folks getting 1099s. They're not paying in any taxes. Their bodies get broken, and it puts an unrealistic burden on our social network, on our safety net to help people out. And that's only going to raise the cost of everything for everybody because you didn't do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there should be some significant penalties for folks in those businesses.
You know, when I take an accounting of the assets and liabilities of the Lehigh Valley, you know, I mean, it would be interesting for us to, you know, see if we could name the same things. But for me, I think one of the best assets in the Lehigh Valley, I don't think there's going to be people listening that think I've finally gone off the deep end, is I think the Lehigh Valley's business leadership is extraordinarily progressive. They're not necessarily with us on what level of government should be engaged in the problem-solving process, but they acknowledge the issues. They're receptive to change. They participate. They give, they volunteer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the Lehigh Valley would be without that, because, I mean, you know, the fact that we have a consolidated chamber, business leadership, the fact that we have an LVEDC, business leadership, the fact that we have a United Way of the greater Lehigh Valley, the business leadership. And that's a real tribute, I think, to this community, that the business leadership is so progressive.
I think you can give Tony a lot of credit, too, because he brought a lot of those folks around. There are some exceptional business leaders around here, and I know Tony hears from his constituents about being too labor, and I hear from mine about being too business.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is you got to find a happy medium and work together. And he's done a remarkable job in swaying the decisions of some very important decision makers in this area.
Bert Daddy was a player in that respect, too, don't you think, Danny?
Yeah. I think he and Elmer were a tough team back then and got a lot of that stuff moving forward. And the world has changed. You can't be as autocratic. You know, it's tough to find that kind of leadership or the ability to lead like that today.
Right.
So,
all right, we're going to need to take another break. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, Tony Iannelli from the Chamber of Commerce, Greg Potter, who currently is a senior labor relations consultant at Capital Blue, but he's also a senior leader in the Lehigh Valley Labor Council. Stick around.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Tonight we're talking about the value of labor and the politics of labor and all the stories that come with it. I've got Greg Potter from the Lehigh Valley Labor Council and Tony Iannelli from the Chamber of Commerce. Tony rode his Harley over here. It makes him much cooler than me. Not that I'm jealous or anything, Tony. Healthcare. Let me take a shot at this for a second. I don't understand why the burden of healthcare for Americans is the burden of employers. Why is it that employers are responsible for health insurance for their workers? Because I think what's going on here is that competitors, one of the ways they compete is over who's better at screwing, if you will, their employees out of health insurance benefits, which is an increasingly costly burden. I mean, we have some employees whose benefits are half of their wages,
yeah.
And I think even more.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that health insurance is the burden of employers, I think, is a huge problem in this country. Do either of you even know how that happened? Why?
The 1940 World War II. They were trying to attract more people to the business force, and by offering a fringe benefit. Exactly.
Got it. Well, so you've got employers paying massive costs for their employees. Our healthcare system is not any better than the rest of the modern world, the civilized world. In most cases, on the basic outcomes of good healthcare, we come out near the bottom in many cases, and yet we're spending gobs of money on it. My understanding was that right before we finally got into the real fight over healthcare at the national level was that the National Association of Manufacturers and maybe even the Chamber of Commerce were on the verge of endorsing single-payer universal health insurance. For me, it just makes sense that if I'm an employer and I can dump that cost as an expense and you put it into the broader general tax base and everybody pays for everybody to have health insurance, strikes me as being something that the business world would jump on, and yet they've dug in their heels against it. What is it with that, Tony? Do you have any sense of why an employer would want to have that cost burden instead of, you know, shifting it over to the broader tax base?
Well, I think as Greg said, it became common. It was initially offered as a benefit, and then it became almost an understood benefit. It was what was offered for security. I do think, in my opinion, I just came from a meeting, ironically, about 2 hours ago. I think affordable care has been, from my perspective, a complete disaster. I think it has, and I see it from a number of fronts. I see it from small business owners whose numbers are going up. I see it from, I have a son-in-law who's $1,400 a month for his health insurance.
247 amendments will do that to you. So, well, the original bill was a much different than it when it went through. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's a frustrating
thing. And I think that providers are trying to figure this whole thing out. So we are ready to go back to now having association plans, and now some of the states have filed lawsuits. So that's in chaos, in my opinion. And I thought the system we had, it's going to sound maybe, I thought it worked, but maybe because I've always had access, I've always had a job.
Well, remember there were 47 million Americans that didn't have health insurance at the time. That's down at least half.
And we talked about this earlier, about going to the emergency room, and too many folks rely on that as their family doctor. They still. And if you're into maintenance and keeping things under control and getting your biometrics taken and finding where the weak spots are, you can do that ahead of time in a lot of situations. Not all, that's for sure. But
let's move on to retirement. Labor had a role in the creation of pensions years ago. Pensions are now making life very tough for almost all levels of government. A lot of companies are struggling with it. We had our own very high-profile case with good people running Just Born. Yep. I don't see where this goes, really. I just, in my judgment, I think the only thing we can do is, since the pension system has been basically now called an entitlement, that once you have a pension, you always have to have a pension, that any new employees are going to have to go to a defined contribution plan, mm-hmm. meaning a 401k. We did it years ago, and I didn't really realize what we were doing. But what do you do with this, Greg?
My mother, who just passed in June, had a pension from Lehigh Valley Health Network, and she retired when she was 83, so she didn't get a lot of use. But I can tell you that for the 9 years or so that she had that, got paid, maybe it was more than that, it helped keep her in her house because she couldn't do it on Social Security alone. That I know, having done her books. The sad part of this is when you have folks who are in a 401k, you know, we mentioned this before, I may as well go down to the sands and put it all on black, because a lot of folks, myself included, are not the best at identifying which stocks. I have funds in with Vanguard because I trust them to know what they do. They do it for a living. I don't have time for that, nor the inclination. But I think it would help to offer some basic instructions for folks. Okay, here's your opening day paperwork, and you sign on, it's 401k, and 3% out of your check, and this and that. That's the last you hear of it. But you can always go online 24 hours a day if you're so inclined or understand that network. There's a lot more to it. And I give the city of Allentown credit. They have an individual who goes over those things with all the employees, and he'll go out to their house any time of day to discuss that. And it's potential revenue for him, too. Learning.
Let's talk politics for a minute. Is there anybody, any candidate in particular that you guys are particularly excited about this year? And at any level, the state legislature, Congress, the Senate, is labor rallying around anyone in particular? Is the business community rallying around anybody in particular?
I'll let Tony take the first swing on this one.
You know, I was thinking as you were saying that. You know, look, I think he's not a candidate. I think Pat Toomey has had a lot of support from business. I think he's a smart guy, and I think people see that, again, from business, which would traditionally be Republican. So,
right.
But I think of the new who's running, I don't hear any incredible excitement. It's just me from about any of the – I'm interested. I think that maybe it'll gear up the congressional race. You know, yeah. Charlie's seat is a little bit – tepid, a little lukewarm. I mean, I don't hear any phenomenal surge on that. So I don't know. I would say nothing that's – I think the even the governor's race, you know, it's sort of out there. I don't know if people – maybe on the business side, if we're just in a pretty good spot. And I don't feel the – maybe the sense of urgency that you might feel on the left.
That's a good turn. That's real important because the – Labor understands that Scott Wagner is not in any way, shape, or form going to help unions, not even a little bit. And Tom Wolf's been very, very good with us. In fact, the Department of Labor Secretary is Jerry Luxiak from the State Teachers Union. And I don't know how that got through. I still don't get it, but he's doing a nice job. Bob Casey's done a great job for us over the years. And
that's interesting, Greg. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I can't name anything that Bob Casey has done that you could put on, you know, his resume as impressive. He's been in for two terms, and you know, frankly, as a registered Democrat myself, it's good to have some, you know, have him help us get closer to a Democratic majority. But I'm not impressed.
Well, a lot of the work that he's done is not through the legislation part, and I've seen firsthand multiple times how he and his office have intervened on situations that have helped us out. You know, back in the day when AT&T tried to close a call center out in near Pittsburgh, Ed Rendell got them to talk about things and negotiate, and they still kept it open. He's done things of that nature, things that aren't always on the paper, but I've seen it firsthand. I'm pretty impressed. And I will say this, Susan Wild, I stayed out of the primaries for any number of reasons, but I've seen Susan Wild when she was running for county commissioner. And she probably had a better or as good an attendance rate as any commissioner. She went to every meeting and learned the issues, and she spent a lot of time learning these issues. And she's worked an awful lot and learned a lot. And with labor, we can't, although some of our leaders do, we can't assume that the candidates are going to understand our issues unless we actually teach them.
Right.
And Susan has made some mistakes, and she's learned by the mistakes, and she's listened to us and is understanding what those issues are about and how it impacts our communities. When we do a candidates forum where we basically have a boot camp and have subject matter experts talk about our issues, we invite both parties from both counties. One party shows up. The other one, for the most part, doesn't. And we've endorsed Republicans over the years, and I still stand beside many of them. They've been great.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to disseminate that.
I gotta
if people care about 40% of the electorate, that's on you, not me.
Pat Brown may be my favorite legislator.
Pat Brown has done very good for a lot of labor, particularly the building trades. And I think he's done a phenomenal job. He's done some good things with education. You know, we've endorsed him on occasion.
You're listening to WDIY. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, Greg Potter from the labor movement, Tony Iannelli, business world representative extraordinaire. Does Donald Trump help you or hurt you if you're a candidate this time?
Well, that's a really, well, it depends. You know, someone asked me that. It depends on what day, what hour you're talking. Yeah, and what city. Look, I think his base is his base is his base. And I don't, you know, and that's not going to change. You see the rallies, and he knows exactly what to say, pushes all the right buttons and gets people wound up and he as a performer, he's incredible. I don't know the answer to that. I do think that certain places, maybe yes, but we're going to find out. We're going to have a midterm, which is is going to be really, really interesting. And so I don't know. I mean, I guess the question, if I was running, would I want him in or would I not? And I don't know what the
if you're Barletta and yeah, you've already got a record on immigration, then I see how you,
yes, I agree,
you tote Trump along.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a woman candidate, if you're a minority candidate, if you're a, I mean, just about anything that requires a little bit of thinking, I'm appalled.
You have some traditionally Republican strongholds, Kansas, that are up now for play because of this same thing. And I don't think his song would play very well in those districts.
Yeah.
It's interesting for me as the business, you know, the business leader in the business community, I should say, from a business perspective, I could just look at that. You know, market's been great, employment, unemployment's been great, business expansion and so on. But it's all the other stuff that sort of, so that's why I say it depends on what he tweets, what day, who we might alienate, who, you know, it's a, we are really, for the first time, really clearly at a, like a 50-50, you know, we got to, it almost feels like the half of the world is in one camp and half of the world is in another.
You know, and I try, you know, Tony, I think you know that I've spent my life, and I'm proud of the fact that I've been able to push the system around but still have key leadership of the system embrace my work. It's something I'm very proud of, but I try really hard not to be part of that very divided, you know, because you're on that side, I hate you type of mm-hmm. mentality. But, man, it's really tough to listen to some of the stuff and the comments that you read on the blogs. And, I mean, there's some meanness out there that I think is terribly unhealthy.
On both sides.
Yeah, yeah. Really. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, and he has done something, I think, that he's sort of – sometimes maybe we go some very far in one direction and we seem to move back. And he has made it okay, acceptable to say things that people wouldn't say in the past, to take on
it's
people.
It's hardly acceptable. I'm sorry. It's disgusting, and we deserve better, and the White House office deserves better than the things that he says. There's no filter, and there's no one there that's controlling him, and that's a shame.
So here we are in Lehigh Valley. We've got all the divisions, but we also have a spirit of cooperation that I think is – I mean, when people ask me what is special about the Lehigh Valley, I tell them I think it's the fact that we've got – a very collaborative spirit, a very cooperative kind of approach, and sides that don't necessarily agree can work together. And you guys probably personify that as much as anybody does. And so is there anything you could brag about that happens in the Lehigh Valley because labor and the business community get together and agree that together we're better than when we're divided?
In my years as president, the proudest thing in my memory is my friendship and relationship with Tony in the chamber. No two ways about it. And it did make everyone happy, and I really don't care. It's the right thing to do. You know, we've got two members on the Board of Governors, I believe, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. there's not a chamber in the country can boast that. We've got a rapport where there's mutual respect. And I'll go to events and see business leaders, and they'll say, hey, I never knew this about so-and-so or about that. They're really good people. We're glad they're on board with this. Better things are happening because of working together.
Yeah.
The days of putting your head in the sand and just banging your head against the wall to get your way doesn't work. Labor's not that big enough, number one. You got to be tactical and surgical and know who your opponent and your ally is. And people do what you inspect, not what you expect. And that's where we have to be smart. But by building relationships, this is the result, and I'm very proud of that.
So are there practical things that are going on that you can cite as examples that –
Yeah, we did
that collaboration.
I think about a year ago, was it? We did a joint press conference. We were excited about the infrastructure dollars that were set
that
aside. Was
more than a year, but that was great.
It was probably 10 years ago. I think
that
it was yesterday.
Huge.
But we were there with the trades group, Lehigh Valley. So was business and labor, wanting the same thing. We want, you know, money invested in infrastructure so we can create jobs and a better infrastructure and good jobs. Again, good jobs. You said it earlier, Alan. If we got a strong middle class, I mean, that's going to push everybody up. Who's going to be left to buy tires and cars and, you know, the kind of money that the middle class really spends?
And if we don't fix bridges, you can't drive on them anyhow. And there's a bunch of them in northern Lehigh County are going to be shut down because they're in decrepit condition. That's the reality.
Tony, your show. You've been running now for, what, 10 years plus?
No, I think 12, Michelle told me the day, yeah.
Do you have numbers?
No, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah.
I mean, you might not want to answer this, and tell me if you don't, but is the run because they're doing a public, do they think of themselves as doing a public service, or do they have numbers that say that Iannelli guy is busting the charts, we got to, you know, increase his exposure?
Are you talking about the TV show, though? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say a little bit of both. I would say the numbers are good. They're not. You know, we're not below. Well, there have been some shows that have been real, real good. It depends really on the show. There are some that have been. Our numbers have been real good. But I think that part of that too is I think that Barry's a community guy, and I think he likes that we hit topics that might be unique to the community that maybe are. You know, things that people aren't talking about, what the minority community is thinking, what labor might be thinking. You know, I don't know, the varied topics you've been on the show. So probably a little bit of both, I would say. I don't want to overstate the numbers. We've had some shows that have been great, but I do think from a public perspective, we've had congressional forums. We've had the Secretary of State on. We've had the Speaker of the House. So we've had a wide variety. We've had, and again, we've had people from, say, maybe the minority community that have come on and talked about access and so on that maybe you wouldn't hear otherwise.
You know, I think your interview of Charlie Dent when Charlie announced that he was retiring was particularly outstanding. I don't get to see the show often, but mm-hmm. I've seen it enough, and I certainly have been on it, and I'm impressed by your theatrics and
softballing.
yeah
I'm not a hard hitting and I you know I admit that I think there are times when I could be a little more hard hitting, but
well, I'll tell you, on behalf of labor, we're thankful to have been given the opportunity to go on many, many times and get our view out there. That's, you don't always find that, you know, when you have the cards all in your hands, you could very well shut them out, and Tony has never ever done that on situations that were not always the most popular. He's always given us the opportunity to bring in people and listen to ideas about shows too. You know, that's a good thing too. The communication's been great with us.
I want to stick one last issue in here before we have to quit, and that is the warehouses. I mean, I think, you know, we're getting warehoused to death in Lehigh Valley. The best farmland in America is being paved over for massive warehouses that employ very few people and cost mountains of money for infrastructure. What do we do about it?
That's a good way. You know, that's a Don. That's an LVDC Don Cunningham question. Yeah. I think that he's got a pretty good view on that. And in terms of there are some good jobs that are provided with that. And there are some that are here, that, as you just said, are taking a lot of space with very little employment. It's not pretty. I agree with you. It's not pretty. I was on my motorcycle the other day, looked to my right, beautiful cornfield, beautiful farmhouse. Look to my left, there's a warehouse. You know, I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah, but here, I live where the cornfields are. I live in Topton, and it's that farmer's land. And if zoning allows for that warehousing, I'm not saying it's pretty, mm-hmm. but it's their land. And you might like the cornfield, but unless you want to go out there and do all that work, you can buy it, I'm sure. But, well,
you know, I've long characterized the Lehigh Valley as the cities of Allentown, Bethlehem East, and the suburbs, and the soon-to-be suburbs. Mm-hmm. You know, that we are paving paradise very rapidly, and we're doing it without getting the kind of return on the investment that we should be getting in terms of tax base, the quality of the jobs, the environmental degradation. It's all part of the problem.
Alan, I know it's your show, but one quick one for you. Are you happy with the growth in Allentown, Main Street, you know, the hope that it was going to spread into the neighborhoods and the city as a whole? That's a whole other
topic. You're talking about the NIS, and that's certainly one that's close to my heart. We haven't done nearly enough. It's been deeply disappointing, and we're going to have to start cranking that discussion back up because we've got a lot of work to do. We don't have the trickle-down happening, and you know, that's what we are promised. So we'll see about that one. We are running out of time. I'm grateful to my friends, Tony Iannelli and Greg Potter, who are two real talented people that make this community a better place. And so thanks to both
of you
for being on the show. You've been listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, and I appreciate your tuning in.